listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Welcome, welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. I am Andrew Berkshire, and I'm here with Mary Clark. I'm from the Game Over Montreal show. Mary is from For the Win. We are here to talk about, frankly, some upsetting topics here today, so we apologize for that, because it seems like we never get a break from that this year in the NHL. And you know what, frankly, it mirrors the world, because before this show started, I watched a 10-minute interview with a doctor from the WHO that basically said this is going to last a lot longer, so great, great. We're bringing you the positive news today, but outside of the rough topic that we're going to talk about off the top, which is the racist incidents that's happened over the last week or so, following the exact same week as the Boston Bruins retired, the number of I can't believe, honestly, that it's the same week, you know, that we're dealing with this, but we're going to get into it. We're also going to do a trade deadline look ahead, and we're going to talk about Shane Wright, because there's not enough talk about Shane Wright. It seems like there's no hype around him. But before we get into all that, Mary, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was busy with football, Andrew. It is that time of year where it's the football playoffs, and NFL went wild this weekend.
Yeah, I don't partake in football. It's not my thing, but I heard that the games, particularly on Sunday, were absolutely wild. First time in NFL history that all four games were decided on the last play, am I correct?
Yeah, first time, or at least in the playoffs. Yeah, there's some like specific qualifier about it, but yeah, in the playoffs, it was wild. I worked on Sunday, so I did a whole, there was just a whole lot of stuff on Sunday. And it was just back-to-back-to-back games. And, you know, I mean, there were only two games, but it was more just like the moments. There was just so much. It was a great weekend of football. And like I said, I know you're not a big football guy, but I had to mention it because that's just kind of everything that's happening. There's like all the fallout is still happening as, you know, we're recording on Monday. So like, it's just, you know, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are out. The Chiefs pulled out a bananas win in overtime after tying the game with 13 seconds left, driving down the field thanks to Patrick Mahomes. It's wacky. I don't talk about a lot of sports other than hockey on this podcast, but since my job is other sports too, I get, you know, I have to do a lot of it. So it's a fun times in the NFL. It's just, you know, busy. So I'm kind of tired today, and also tired because of the other things we're going to have to talk about, but it's par for the course, it seems, you know, right now in hockey, and it has been over the last couple months, basically since we started the show, Andrew.
Yeah, it's been like an unfortunate series of events. And, you know, I think the biggest part of it is that people are empowered to speak out about things now. And it's not that anything is particularly worse at the moment. It's just that we're seeing it actually highlighted instead of ignoring it. And that's like my semi-positive takeaway on it. But, you know, it's tough. I'm looking through this, and like obviously the first topic that we're going to talk about today is the two racist incidents that happened in the last week. And it's not just this week either. Like, there was another big one, I believe, in junior hockey with a kid relatively recently. It's just, I'm kind of at a loss for words because of how often this is happening, or at least how often it's being pointed out now. You know, this is two racist incidents the same week that the Boston Bruins retired Willie O'Ree's number, who broke the color barrier in the NHL. It's like, you want to be shocked, but it's also not shocking. I don't know how to explain the emotion really of it. It was like, you want to be less surprised, if you know what I mean. And I'm just, it's crazy. It's crazy. So the first one was Boko Imama. He was there was a racial gesture against him. I don't know what the term racial gesture, like, this is what we always talk about. It's racist gesture, right? People don't want to, like, the PR people don't want to put the spin on it that it's actually racist. By Christoph Hrabak, who gets a 30-game suspension.
And I don't believe that we know exactly what it was, because I don't think footage has come out because of it.
Yes, so, whereas the racist gesture that happened, geez, was it Saturday night?
Yeah,
Saturday night. It was Saturday night, because it happened, it came to light while I was doing my other show. And so I heard about it right after I was finished from Julian McKenzie, who had posted about it in like a group chat that I'm in with him. And I was like, oh my God. And it is, at that moment, the footage wasn't out, but it came out. It was a racial gesture directed towards Jordan Subban by Jacob Panetta, where he made essentially like gorilla or monkey gestures. And I'm guessing there was some sound effect going along with it as well when he did it. And Subban just lost it and basically beat the tar out of him, which is great, frankly, because he deserved it. Shocking to see the actual gesture itself and how gross it was, and the fact that he waited for Subban to be turned, absolute coward garbage, along with being racist. And Jordan called him out on Twitter, and then his big brother PK also dove into it. And I sent you the post gamer that PK did from his Sunday night game against the LA Kings, where he talked about it, and I took some notes from it just because, like, what he said was, I think it was like 12 minutes.
Yeah, 12 minutes.
And he said a lot of things that I thought were very important to talk about. First of all, he talked about how he rarely talks about this stuff. He doesn't jump on it every time. He doesn't think that that's necessarily useful, which, I mean, people can agree to disagree with him on that, but he's been talking about this stuff more and more, especially this year. And I'm glad for that, because the NHL and hockey in general needs someone like PK Subban to be at the forefront of this. And, you know, the fact that it was his brother, he said, obviously, like, made a difference in why he was going to be talking about it, because he has to defend his brother. He loves him and cares for him. He said that Jordan is fine and he's fine, but the point is that this has to stop happening for the next generation. And he says that obviously they don't want pity, because that's not helpful either, which is true. You know, like, we have to take actionable steps here. And I think that's where you have to kind of try to spin these things into a positive. And these occurring also both right after the Hockey Diversity Alliance created that spectacular ad, which is, again, very jarring to watch if you watch the unedited version, which I think is entirely the point, because this stuff should be shocking to you. It should shock you to your core. And Subban mentioned, you know, seeing this happen in person and not calling it out allows it to spread, which I think is 100% accurate. And he also pointed out, this is one thing that I think is extremely important for everyone to understand who is talking about, like, cancel culture or, you know, you can't ruin a guy's career over this. He said, like, you know, people who make excuses like, oh, somebody had a bad day and they just, like, let something slip. Nobody gives a shit if someone who was drinking and driving had a bad day, right? You still face the consequences. Subban said, pay the piper. So, yes, context matters, sure. But in terms of the response, it doesn't really matter all that much. And if you had a bad day and your response to that is to be a racist, I'm sorry to say, but you're a racist. Like, a bad day doesn't make you hate, you know? Like, so I'm 100% with PK on that. I think that when he talked about his Blue Line Buddies program and the things he does in the community to try to affect positive change and to be an example, that's good. I do think that there's also a place for people who spend the time pushing back aggressively against these behaviors. And he had mentioned that the players that he talked to, he mentioned Jonathan Quick specifically, were just so tired of this garbage and they want it to be over with. And obviously that extends way past hockey. But I would like to see somebody who's not black step up, you know, and say that publicly. It's nice for them to privately support PK. And maybe it's a case of, I know, like, I deal with this sometimes as well, trying to be outspoken about this stuff. As a white person, especially as a white dude who's straight, you know, you don't want to overstep where you want to let somebody who's actually affected personally have their space to talk about it, right? But you can't be silent either. Yes, give those people, like, center those people in everything that you're talking about. Let the affected be at the forefront and listen to what they're actually saying and what they want, right? But you can't just let them fight it out on their own, because then you're not supporting them. And I'd like to see some white NHLers stick their necks out a little bit here in the next couple of days and support their teammates. Because frankly, at every opportunity where they've had the chance, all I can think of is refusing to kneel with their teammates during the COVID playoffs, right?
God, that seems so long ago, Andrew.
It does.
You said that, and that was lifetimes ago for me.
It feels
because
like
I think
it,
I was on my previous job before this, so it really was a lifetime ago. And it's wild to think about. And you said, other NHL players standing up. Tom Wilson tweeted something in support, saying that these racist actions have no place in our sport or community, and I stand with my friend Jordan Subban and the Stingrays.
Good on him.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to give Tom Wilson credit. This is the
worst. I know. That's the one prominent one I saw. There's possibly others.
The only ones that I saw PK. JT Brown, obviously, and his wife were talking about it because they are fantastic. But I didn't see a lot of others pushing it, and I wish.
I feel
that
like
there
was
be.
One more, but I remember specifically Tom Wilson. But I wish I could, like, you know, track it down, but you know, that's not the point. But there may be some, but there's not as much as you would like, I think, is what we can say here. And it sucks. It feels like we've rehashed this ground over and over and over again, and it is just really unfortunate that we have to keep doing so. And I've just had enough of it, honestly, and I really think we should, you know, start to implement zero tolerance policies, because you're right, Andrew, like you don't say these things in the heat of the moment and it's just a slip up. It's something that's internalized within you, and you can work on that, and you can, you know, you can become a better person. You just have to put in the work to do so, but you don't deserve to be playing sports if that's how you feel and think. You can unlearn those things, and we're all still unlearning, you know, as you know, to white people on this podcast. I can't speak for you, Andrew, but I think we're all still unlearning, you know, biases and stuff like that. That's just kind of how inherent it is in our culture. And 100%. So, but no one, like, there shouldn't be second, third, fourth chances. You know, we talked about this with Evander Kane, a couple weeks ago, basically. But hockey shouldn't be a space for these second, third, and fourth chances. You need to prove that you're a good person, put in the work to do so, prove that you're not, you know, racist and stuff like that. Because hockey has no place for it. And it is fostering this culture because it's not doing anything about it. Once, you know, one league or the NHL puts the ban hammer down and suspends somebody, like, or, you know, boots them out indefinitely, I'm pretty sure Jacob Panetta was, I believe, suspended indefinitely from the ECHL. And then was
more than that now. Yeah. I mean, okay. Originally there was the suspension, right? But the team initially released one statement.
Yes.
Which was wholly inadequate.
And then the second one isn't even
a
better.
Follow-up statement. Oh my God, it was even worse.
The second one is worse because they did the whole apologize to anyone who was offended. That's not an apology.
They finally released the player, which I guess.
Yeah, they did that in that statement. And I know that there's probably things to say about PR people and departments, because it really seems as if there was no, I don't know how it is in that level of hockey, but they probably don't get a lot of support or as much. So it's tough, but you know, you really should know by now, considering hockey culture as it is. We've been through this before in sports in general. You should know that that is not an apology at all.
Yes.
So I wouldn't want to be a PR person, is basically what I'm saying here, but
That's one thing I continually wondered while that saga was going on with the Jacksonville, what's their name? Jacksonville Iceman.
Iceman
is like, how much do they pay a PR person in the ECHL?
Yeah.
Right. Or do they even have a PR person, or is it just some person?
Or is it just their social media person?
Yeah. So it's like, on the one hand, the statements are awful. On the other hand, it's probably not a professional, or
yeah,
it's somebody
probably
they hired last minute to fire something out.
And I don't want to say it's an intern.
It's not an excuse.
Yeah. And I don't want to say it's an intern because that is also kind of overused and overdone, because social media is like an actual profession. But considering this is the ECHL and their level of not professionalism, but they don't have a
their
team
budget.
Of yeah, their budget. They don't have a team of social media people like, you know, your NHL staffers do. Like
yeah,
they
even
have a
like
big
American Hockey League teams don't,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I can only wonder what's going on behind the scenes there. And it's not an excuse. It's just one of those things where it wasn't a good situation all around, I would expect. And, you know, as somebody who has been on the, you know, I clearly didn't do anything as drastic as that, but I've, you know, made my social media mess ups, as we all probably have in our lifetime.
Of course.
You know, it sucks to be on the receiving end of that. And you're like, oh no, oh no. But it's still not an excuse. It was a terrible apology. So I hope lessons are learned here. And as you know, they're, you know, taking, you know, they're figuring it out on their end. But honestly, I don't even remember the original point I was making in this, but it's all unfortunate. It was about, you know, zero tolerance and stuff like that. It's past time at this point for the NHL and other leagues to do so, because this culture is going to keep festering until there's actual consequences. And, you know, once they actually, you know, throw someone out for good, you know, and say that this isn't acceptable at all, no amount of like teaching, you know, teaching seminars or flowery press conferences and, you know, tweets of we're going to learn and do better, that's all just talk. They need to actually do something. And even like even those like teachings in the Hockey Diversity Alliance, like that's nice to have, but that's not like there needs to be actual consequences for these people, because a lot of these people have gotten off, you know, scot-free.
Yeah. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? And I feel like the Hockey Diversity Alliance is probably ahead of where they were, but not to like talk too much shit about it, but the You Can Play organization, I find the function of that organization essentially was a way to offer forgiveness to people who did homophobic crap, you know, and there's like some level of learning maybe, but I remember like the Andrew Shaw incident, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gross. And then he becomes a You Can Play ambassador like a year later. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I just don't buy it. And a lot of that stuff I find most like this is why I think the Hockey Diversity Alliance is a little bit more interesting, is the NHL doesn't seem to want to work with them. Right. So that tells me that they're a little bit more aggressive about this stuff, whereas like anything that is from the NHL or from people who are now very in deep with the NHL, like the Burke family. Intentions may be good, but I just don't buy it as being an agent of change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wasn't talking bad about the Hockey Diversity.
No, I know.
Yeah, it's more just like what they're not going to be able to enact punishments severe mm-hmm. enough that things will change. They can educate and they can, you know, push the NHL for reform and stuff like that.
But the league has to act.
But the league has to act. This is that's more what I was getting at here, because the Hockey Diversity Alliance is a good thing. And, you know, it's great that the NHL doesn't want to work with them, because that means that they're hitting on things that, you know, the league doesn't want to do. And that's good. That's what we want. But in the end, it has to come from the NHL and the other hockey leagues to put that into action. So that my hope is that we'll get to a point where it's not tolerated anymore, and we get rid of the, you know, second chance, third chance type of thing. Cause that's, you shouldn't, that, you know, you're an athlete that's getting paid money, to, you know, play a sport. It may not be a lot in the ECHL or the AHL or what have you, but you're still being paid money to be an athlete and represent something bigger than yourself. And you don't deserve that privilege, if you are a racist. And I think that yes. is, I don't really know how else, what else we can go from here other than saying that, because this is just disgusting. It's sad, especially because, like you said, it's in the same week as the Willie O'Ree jersey retirement. And
right before Black History Month.
Yeah, that's also true, like... too. It is. It's really just, you know, it's nice that it's a double-edged sword. It's great that these things are being brought to light so that there's hopefully consequences and hopefully we can take steps forward. But it also is just so sad because you hear about these things and then you wonder what else aren't we hearing about. So it's just a disappointment all around. And I want hockey to be better. And hockey, they always tout that hockey is for everyone. It's not. And it no. should be for everyone, but it's not. And it is, you know, just disappointing that we always end up back here, Andrew.
It is. And, you know, I'm trying to also look at it from a positive perspective as well. I look at that, the HDA ad that they did, and the fact that I think it's now 3 incidents total since that ad came out that have been publicized. And it's that kind of stuff that I'm thinking, does that ad affect change in a way that people are talking about it? You know what I mean? Where things happen, like what happened to Jordan Subban, and it's not brushed off, it's not ignored. You know, and you don't have a bunch of people saying, like, oh, well, he didn't really do anything. You've got video of it. People took video of it. And Jordan Subban, like, does he go on Twitter and tell the truth of what happened there if not for the HDA ad? Maybe. I don't know. But I think the one positive that I can look at from this is that black people, people of color, indigenous people feel like they are more empowered now to speak about these things. And maybe it's not enough change that comes out of it, but something is happening. You know what I mean? Like, there's, we're trying to take steps. And like, one of the things that PK said in his little press conference that stuck out to me was at the very end, where he said, like, for those who say, like, this is a misunderstanding, he said, this is not a misunderstanding. If that's the case, I've got hundreds of misunderstandings, but you can read that in my book one day. And I thought, you know, I've heard things, rumors, whispers of things that PK Subban has dealt with, but he is very, very reticent to share those things. And the fact that he mentioned it now, I'm hoping that we get to see a PK that, I don't want to say doesn't give a shit, but that is willing to be more hated, right? And I think the PK on the ice is an agitator, and he does things that will drive hate, but off the ice is the most likable person probably in the entire NHL.
Oh yeah,
Like, he's just
100%.
extremely personable, has all the time in the world for people and for media. I hope that we get to see a PK that lets the veil slip a little bit, just so we can get a little bit more truth of the garbage that he's dealt with. And if that comes in book form, I'm all for that as well. It'll probably be after his career's over. But I will be having that book on pre-order.
Oh, 100%. Dude's a superstar. I mean, I know that his, on ice play hasn't been as good as it was, back when he was with, Nashville, or, all that, but he's an absolute legend in the sport just for his personality and what he brings to the game overall. And he's just a fun dude. And his press conference, I watched it, was very calm about it all. And I mean, he probably has to be given all that he's dealt with in his life. And you're right. I'm definitely going to be pre-ordering that book because, I'd love to read it. He's got stories that are, be fun and also very sad and frustrating, I'm sure, at the same time.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the trade deadline. I know it's a while away, but we're going to look at some of the intriguing stories that are going to happen because, frankly, in the last couple of years, a lot of the biggest moves have happened before the trade deadline. So we can't wait that long. So we're going to talk about some teams that need some pieces, what players could fit those, and a little bit more coming up next. But first, I got to tell you about BetOnline. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy betting new year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, Mary, I feel like we've been talking about the Edmonton Oilers in like 5 straight shows,
They're
but
the
I feel like
only major thing that's really happening. I mean, I
I
don't want to
know.
talk
I
about the
mean,
Flyers' 11-game losing streak now and how I think that
I do.
they're putting. I think the Flyers are putting a defenseman, Nick Seeler, as a forward for I think Monday night's game. So by the time you hear this will have seen what that experiment was, but it's all bad. There's injuries, COVID. It's bad. I don't want to talk about the Flyers because everybody on my timeline is mad about them. The Oilers are at least a little bit more interesting because I'm away from it, but we can talk about the Flyers if you want. But they're in the, they're in this segment tangentially because we're going to talk about trade deadline stuff, and we'll speak on it, I'm sure. But I wanted to,
Hold on. Breaking news before we get into the Flyers and Oilers. The Vancouver Canucks have named Emily Castonguay, a former player agent, as their hockey, the actual thing is assistant GM.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this is, I believe, the first woman assistant GM in the league. This comes on the heels of the Vancouver Canucks hiring Rachel Dory,
Friend of the show, Rachel Dory.
So this is, the Montreal Canadiens made some talk about interviewing women candidates, and they did interview Emily, but the Vancouver Canucks, out of nowhere... I've heard some people talk about how it was important to Jim Rutherford to introduce some more diversity, but this is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, this I don't know much about her work in general, but...
She's smart. She's whip smart.
I mean, I figure she's smart if she just got hired as assistant GM of the Canucks. But it seems like the Canucks are really building something awesome. It's great to see women take positions that usually would have been filled by men, but it is... This is what we want. This kind of like rolls back into, a little bit of what we were talking about earlier. But like, it's representation is good. This is good for the game. New voices in the NHL is always good. This is awesome. I obviously wasn't paying attention to Twitter when this happened, but I pulled it up now and it seems as if basically everybody agrees that this is a great move. So it's awesome to see what the Canucks are building there. It reminds me a lot of what Seattle started doing when they, announced a whole bunch of really awesome people behind the scenes. But this is great. It's really cool. Happy for Vancouver. And they're really going to be an interesting organization to watch in the future, for sure, with this.
Yeah, this is super interesting because just a little bit of insider information, but this is the second straight hire by the Vancouver Canucks that I believe the Montreal Canadiens were also interested in making.
Ooh.
So... Yes, the Canadian clubs that are rebuilding, fighting with each other over the best candidates out there. Very, very interesting move by the Vancouver Canucks. Awesome. All right, let's talk some trade deadline. It's always fun to get breaking news on the show. I know it won't be quite so breaking when it's published, but that's still fun.
It's not going to be breaking, but it's cool to see our, initial reactions to stuff. So,
100%. Awesome. All right, so the Edmonton Oilers, I think we agree, will be going for a goalie. I don't remember if I've said it on this show or it's just everywhere else that I've been, but I think the Edmonton Oilers are going to try to move things around and get Marc-Andre Fleury. I've heard some insiders talk about how they're hesitant to go after a goalie of that caliber, and they might try to just like do a spot fix and do something like Anton Khudobin. But if that's true, I understand not wanting to give up like high-end picks and stuff or high-end prospects, but the Oilers need to start taking things seriously. And if they're going to pick up another has-been maybe, like, just fire yourself. If you're Ken Holland and you're looking at maybe this goalie can help us out a little bit, shut your trap and get out of that job. Like, they need somebody to take the reins here and do something that can actually help this team. I think Fleury helps in multiple different ways. First of all, he's won before, so he brings that perspective. He's still a good goaltender, which is something that they flat out do not have. And also, he's an expiring contract, so you're not committed to him. And he's known as one of the best players in the league in the locker room. Everybody loves this guy. And if there's any locker room, losing streak being ended in Calgary notwithstanding, if there's any locker room that needs somebody to lighten the mood a little bit, it's the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and they need to do something soon because they have a very packed February schedule. So they need to do something sooner rather than later. And you mentioned before we went to break that, a lot of the biggest moves happen before the deadline even gets here. And the deadline is shifted to, I think it's late March now. It's in like 2 months, basically, like a little less than 2 months now, I think. So, there's still a lot of time to go before the trade deadline, but the Oilers need to do something fast. Because they will be, you know, I mean, they're sinking, but like I mentioned on a previous podcast, like a week or so ago, that like there's still a chance for them to. It's not like the East. The East is basically all but locked up in their playoff spots. The Oilers still have a chance to make the playoffs if they can turn it around fast enough, and they're not going to turn it around with the group they have now. They need some sort of external force to get them there. So trading for Marc-Andre Fleury seems like the biggest slam dunk. I kind of feel bad, you know, if Marc-Andre Fleury goes there and the Oilers are still bad because he seems to not be having a very fun time in Chicago, you know, with them and their, you know, losing ways. So we'll see, but I think it should, in theory, make the Oilers better. I don't see why they would be averse to it. I don't really get the arguments against it. But goaltending is definitely going to be a thing for them, and Fleury's probably would they would have to be they're like targeting him.
It just seems like too perfect of a fit,
Yeah,
right? And for
exactly.
people who think that the cap hit's a problem, like, okay, Koskinen can go the other way, and then you can move things around. Like, I just don't think at the deadline that it's that difficult to fit in a couple million dollars, even in the flat cap that everybody's kind of strapped. Like, get creative. I'm so tired of NHL GMs and their excuses, you know?
Yes,
Like,
exactly.
I mean, and would they be in this situation if they didn't trade for Duncan Keith and have the Blackhawks retain zero salary
Oh,
for some ridiculous reason?
everybody has to go. Everybody has to go in Edmonton. But in
It's
order to, you
bad.
know, they, because I don't remember which podcast I was listening to, because there's a lot I listen to. And somebody was like, you usually don't want to make, you know, a band-aid fix on something. That's you don't want to make reactionary moves. But the Oilers kind of need a reactionary move because they're just like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place in terms of like where they are as an organization. So they need to make the playoffs this year.
Yes, they do. And I feel like there's a difference between something that might look like a band-aid or a reactionary move and reacting to a team flailing despite the underlying numbers being very strong, right? And like the Oilers overall are the strongest this year that than they've been under like the McDavid era, right? Like the foundations are more solid than in most years. So even though they are extraordinarily weak without Draisaitl and McDavid on the ice, they're still a lot better than they've been. Like, this is a good chance for them to do something. The West is relatively weak. You only really need to beat Vegas and Colorado, and maybe one of those two will beat each other. You know, like, or I guess they can't because they would meet in the final, but maybe one of them will disappoint, right? And you won't have to face them both. You might have to have a relatively easy way to get to the Stanley Cup final. So, whereas Fleury might be a band-aid in the fact that he won't be back the following year, he would be a very good bandage. You know, it would be like a full-on dressing as opposed to right out of a box. You know? So maybe they need that bandage to get them into the conversation as opposed to, you know, just sinking or swimming where it looks more like sinking continually. Like, I don't know. I think let's move on from the Oilers. I feel like we've given them so much time over the last few weeks here. So you have in here the Maple Leafs looking for defense. I wonder if everyone gets healthy, it's probably not a big deal, right? But when has that ever happened for anyone this
Yeah,
year?
this is true. Yeah, I mean, I thought of it as like a, you know, insurance policy basically, because I mean, the Maple Leafs are great on offense. You know, defense, I think they need to start, you know, relying on trying to get Mrazek more into games. Because, like the Oilers, they also have a lot of games coming up in February. Because a lot of the Canadian teams have a lot of games to, you know, backfill in their schedule, essentially, because of all the COVID stuff and the way that the, I don't know, that something about the NHL needing money and pushing Maple Leafs games off because they make a whole bunch of money for the league, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I mean, the defense, I believe that they have Jake Muzzin is out concussion, but I don't know how long that is. I just thought of it more as like an insurance thing because it seems as if like that's probably, I don't want to say the weakest spot, but you know, that and if one
I
of
think
the
it's fair to say it's their weakest spot.
If one of their top players goes down, you know, they're relying on, you know, Timothy Liljegren and Rasmus Sandin to, you know, make up, like, you know, be a big part, and they're very young. So, you know, it just, you know, depth, and
Depth's
stuff
never
like that.
bad.
Yeah, especially if you're the Maple Leafs and are eternally cursed. So
yeah, Muzzin's still day to day. Justin Holl is day to day in COVID protocol, so they haven't got too many injuries on defense, but it thins out pretty quick. And the young guys, Liljegren especially, has struggled.
Yeah.
When he's been pushed too far up the lineup, so it's definitely something they need to consider. I know that Sheldon Keefe called them soft the other day, which is, you never want to hear your coach call you soft. I think people are kind of biting a little bit too hard on that. I think he was just getting them to, like, it wasn't necessarily calling them soft in terms of, like, they need to hit more. It was like they need to compete harder. And I think they did that in the following game. So I don't know if they're, you know, in the Ben Chiarot sweep to stakes, which I said on Twitter just to, like, make fun of Leafs fans. I know they don't want Chiarot. But it would be very funny if they traded a first-round pick for Ben Chiarot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's who did they get last year at the deadline that was a bad pickup? Nick Foligno? That's right. That's right. It was Foligno. That was a...
Yeah, I mean, he spent most of the time hurt, too.
I know, but I still... Just... I didn't get that move when they first got him, and then... I mean, he got hurt.
They paid way too much.
They paid way too much. It just didn't... It didn't make sense to me at the time. But the next biggest one I had was... I've seen rumblings on Twitter of the Minnesota Wild are looking for a center, and Claude Giroux's name keeps getting brought up, and I'm very sad about it.
But like, when's has Claude Giroux been playing center at all?
No, I was gonna say he's not really as effective as a center as he was when he was younger. He plays mostly on the wing now. But I've
when
seen
they
that
moved him to wing, it kind of revitalized his career.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But I've seen that get, you know, talked about on Twitter. I don't know if from insiders, but fans are kind of like, you know, bringing that up. So I thought,
I mean,
it was
who
just...
who doesn't want Claude Giroux on their team, right?
That's true. He's still like. I'm sure I'm going to have more thoughts to say about, you know, Claude Giroux when it's looking more of a when than an if he, you know, leaves the Flyers, and how he really didn't get a lot of help, and, you know, he tried his best, but he's still a good player. He'll bring a lot to a team for sure, but it's hard to think of Giroux moving at the deadline, but you never know what the Flyers. I mean, now they have an 11-game losing streak, and, you know, they had a 10-game losing streak earlier in the season, and we're in kind of uncharted waters for the Flyers. It really feels like we're on the precipice of them blowing things up actually for real this time, because I don't think that they can go back to the drawing board and try and, you know, they tried that in the offseason. It didn't work through injuries, COVID, and it feels like the Flyers have gotten unlucky in certain regards, but you know, it's really hard to say what they're going to do, but I mean, yeah. I've also heard, you know, I mean, Drew's kind of been, you know, pegged to go to Ottawa over the years because he's, you know, from that area. I don't know, but I'd at least keep an eye on Claude Giroux at the trade deadline, because you never know. We're so far out from the trade deadline, but I thought it was worth talking about because, like, we're far out, but it's going to get here before we know it. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe that's just me looking at next month with the Olympics, because I have to cover the Olympics. I know NHL players don't have to worry about them, but maybe it's just me being like, oh God, the trade deadline isn't really that far away, even though it feels like it's far away. But there's at least interesting conversations to have. And I mean, I don't know if the Wild will, you know, that seems like they're looking for a center. I don't think Claude Giroux would be a good fit for them at center, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him move at the end of the day. I'm gonna have to, like, when we get to that point, because it really feels like we're going to, I'm gonna have a lot of feelings to parse out, so get ready for the sad Claude Giroux hour whenever this happens, because I'm gonna have a lot of feelings and I'm gonna want to, you know, be in them for a while, I'm sure.
Yeah. We also had on here the Penguins looking for a backup. Yeah, I think that's
We talked to Hunter last week.
Yeah, it makes sense. I feel like Jake Allen is a really good fit there.
Yeah, can you explain more? Because you mentioned that. Yeah, can you explain more?
Well, I mean, Jake Allen is a guy who, in short spurts, can be relied on to be a starting goaltender. He's played really, really well in Montreal through very trying circumstances on a team that is not very good. He's a guy who is great in the locker room. He is very good with media as well. He, like, just shoulders burdens very well. And I think that he could fit in great there. He's got another year on his contract, which makes him slightly less, I guess, tradable for teams like the Penguins, who are always trying to maneuver their cap situation. But at the same time, I feel like even if you acquire him at $2.875 million a year cap hit, he's very movable if you want to then move on in the off season, right? So like you can treat it as a rental and then something that you can recoup later, or you can go into next season. And I don't think that if you have a goaltender who you think might play 30 games for you the next year, the $2.875 million is expensive. I think that's actually relatively affordable. So I think he's a very, very interesting commodity for a lot of teams. But we were going to talk about sellers as well, but then we had the Canucks news.
I just wanted to mention two names before we move on, because we haven't really talked about the John Klingberg stuff in Dallas. You know, he wants out of there, and that actually seems like it feels like it's going to happen. He's on, you know, the verge of getting probably a pretty big contract, but he's on the last year of his deal, so maybe he could just be a rental for someone and then test the free agency market. And then Arizona basically is going to sell off everybody, it feels like, and Jacob Chychrun might be in that, you know, pool of players to go. So just names to keep an eye out, especially on the defensive market. So maybe the defensive market actually has some really, you know, interesting names this year, which doesn't feel like often happens at the trade deadline. But I wanted to mention those before we moved on, because we've had other things to talk about, and we haven't really talked about, you know, Arizona and Dallas for a little bit. But I thought it was worth mentioning their names, because they're kind of the biggest least defensemen on the market at the trade deadline, and two interesting names. And, you know, it's wild to me that Klingberg is 29 years old, because he feels like he's, you know, one of the younger guys in the NHL, but maybe that's just me forgetting how passage of time works.
Yeah, I mean, he was an older rookie as well, so that kind of affects that idea, yeah. I believe anyway. So yeah, Klingberg getting on in the end of a prime year, but still a very dangerous offensive defenseman. But we're going to probably hold a lot of the seller talk for next week, because we ran a little bit long there. But we're going to talk about Shane Wright coming up in a minute. But first, I want to thank everybody for making the Crosscheck NHL show your first listen of the day. We're on the Locked On Podcast Network, and you can find us anywhere you can find podcasts, and also on YouTube now, which is always very fun. And yeah, thanks for listening with us, or listening to us, sorry, sticking with us through these COVID seasons that we've been covering. It's fun times, but hopefully it'll get better. All right. So, Mary, Shane Wright is a guy that has been kind of talked down a lot in recent weeks. I think ever since the World Juniors, where he didn't stand out in those two games before the tournament was canceled.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it's like people people who don't watch junior hockey, and listen, I don't watch junior hockey either because I don't have the time, but a lot of people who don't watch junior hockey see the World Juniors, and like that's how they make up their minds on like who's a good and bad prospect. It's just like whoever excels in that tournament is great, and whoever doesn't, oh, they're going to be a bust. And heading into that tournament, Shane Wright was having a tough-ish season in the Ontario Hockey League, but not a bad season. It's just like the offensive production hasn't been what a lot of people expected. But he missed a lot of time due to COVID, like a lot of prospects did, right? So it's kind of a weird situation of how much development time this draft has missed in the like North American Hockey Leagues, right? The European Hockey Leagues, I believe, played more. But like last year, he didn't play at all. This year, he's played 28 games plus two World Juniors games. But over the weekend, started turning some heads. He had over three games a highlight reel goal that blew the doors off people, 4 points, won 71% of his faceoffs, and shut down some of the most dangerous players in the OHL, with his team, Kingston Frontenacs, winning all three games. So I try to rely on, because I don't have the time to invest myself, the experts who watch these games that I trust to tell me like who's a good prospect, what is good about a prospect, what's interesting about them. And everybody that I talk to that watches Shane Wright on a regular basis says he's not a generational scorer, but he's a guy that's going to carry a line in the NHL and do all of the little things extremely well. The comparisons I've heard are Jonathan Toews, Patrice Bergeron, or a bigger Brandon Gallagher. And I don't know, if you're looking at comparisons to those three guys, and obviously none of those players are a direct parallel. The thing that I heard most recently was that Jonathan Toews is the best comparison for like style of play, but those are excellent players to be compared to. Like, if Brendan Gallagher was like 6'1", he would be a superstar in the NHL, you know? So, like, if that's the kind of player Shane Wright is, and, you know, no one is saying he's going to have the exact same ceiling as those players, this is not a bad top end pick for this draft.
Yeah. And the reason why I wanted to highlight him here is because I felt like we had such a downer of a show. I mean, it's important and necessary to talk about, but I was just like, I need something fun to talk about. And that goal crossed 100%. My timeline last night. And I was like, this is fun. I mean, he basically, it almost looked like he was throwing a drop pass behind the net, but he wasn't really, because there was no one behind him. So he just kind of banked it off the goalie and went in, and people, you know, were astounded at it. And it was a really great goal, and it was awesome. And I, you know, it sucks that people make these, like, you know, it, like, have these impressions of a person went, like, through the World Juniors. And but that's just kind of how social media is in general, making, you know, general statements about things they really don't know about, you know, thinking they're an expert in these things when they really aren't. But I'm excited to see what he's got at the NHL level, especially because he's being compared to those players. I mean, he's not going to be there is only one Jonathan Taves and stuff like that, but it's still going to be really awesome. And it seems like, you know, it's going to be a great pickup for whomever grabs him. Arizona, you know, the Montreal. And I know a lot of Flyers fans are talking about tanking to possibly get the number one overall pick. So it's going to be a really interesting draft time when we get there in the summer. But I also just wanted to, you know, before we move on to the pop culture stuff, is there any, like, really fun, awesome goals that you remember, Andrew, from your, you know, hockey fandom? Because I don't know, it's a fun topic. I was like, I need something fun to talk about. I specifically want to, you know, highlight Claude Giroux's goal in overtime against the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup final. That was a really awesome moment. I mean, I know that was years and years and years ago, but I'm kind of in a little Claude Giroux nostalgia moment right now. But that was a really awesome goal that I just remember, you know, as part of my Flyers fandom growing up. But is there any, like, major goals you remember or you loved for, you know, reasons of, you know, it was an awesome play or the atmosphere was great, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I have a few. I mean, I've been on a bit of a highlight kick recently because, let's face it, the games that I have to watch are not great. Although the last three haven't been too bad, but the games that I'm paid to watch have been a little bit rough this season. But a tweet went around, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, and I had retweeted it and it kind of went viral. And it was a goal from Brendan Gallagher, but PK Subban was the one who did all the work. It was, I believe, the 2014 playoffs, where the Canadians defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round in a sweep. And Subban kind of circles the entire Lightning zone, and Andre Palat tries to chase him around and, like, check him a little bit. But Subban pulls in tight to the net as he swoops around it, and Palat's stick wedges into the net, and then the butt of the stick wedges into his hip, and he goes full on ass over tea kettle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then Subban swoops up beside the net and fires a backhand pass across the middle, and Gallagher one times at home. And I believe that was a game-winning goal in maybe game three, because I think Max Pacioretty scored the game winner in game four in overtime, if I'm correct. But yeah, huge goal, fantastic goal. And after seeing that, I kind of went on, like, a Subban deep dive, like, watching old highlights. And the best goal that I've ever been in an arena for was PK Subban, 2014 playoffs also, I believe, against Boston. He gets a penalty by checking, like, I think it was Lucic, but he also hit Thomas Vanek on the play. Like, I remember that, and it was like Vanek was kind of rocked, and he was really upset about it, and then he looked at the replay, like, the penalty, and he was like, oh, no, that was a penalty, which was very funny. He gets out of the box, and he gets hit with a breakaway pass and goes in on Tuukka Rask, dekes him out, and the crowd goes absolutely ballistic. Loudest I have ever heard a crowd in my life in that arena. And of course the Canadians end up winning that series before game seven, or no, after game six. I believe the Canadians had tied it up because the Bruins were ahead 3-2. And they were going back to Boston. He said, I can't wait to go back to Boston to hear the crowd and just take it all away from them. Like, hear all the noise in the Boston crowd, take it all away from them. And of course he backed that up. The Canadians won in game seven, phenomenal showmanship from PK Subban and why he will live on in Montreal forever.
Yeah. What a time that was. I'm trying to think of any others. You know, we talked a little bit about with Hunter last week about the, you know, Flyers Penguins series. I think it was like, what, 2012 it must have been. I'm pretty sure that's the year Claude Giroux had that really awesome first shift against the Penguins and scored that goal. Maybe, I don't know, all those like series kind of blend together, but he had a really awesome first shift where he knocked over Sidney Crosby, then scored a really awesome goal. And that was,
I remember that it was like right off the face off he just like checked
and then
him
that's
down,
the
right?
Whole thing where Peter Laviolette was like, Claude Giroux is the best player in the world, and then that quote,
yes,
follows Claude Giroux everywhere, and I feel so bad because he doesn't deserve to be made fun of. He's still a really good hockey player, and I will, you know, go to my grave defending Claude Giroux. I'm trying to think
that
of other ones, like other goals, though. But what were you
that
saying?
Isn't an annoying thing that we do as fans, hey? Is like somebody will make a bad take. Like Jonathan Taves was a victim of that for a long time, where people were like, oh yeah, Jonathan Taves, best player in the world. And then everyone just like, instead of attacking the take, they're like, Jonathan Taves sucks.
Yeah.
And then there's this narrative that goes out that like Taves is actually terrible. And then a couple years pass by and everyone's like, actually, you know what? You're like, Taves is kind of underrated. And he's like, guys, he was good the whole time.
Yeah,
he was good the whole time.
So,
but yeah, that's the fun thing. But yeah, we'll move on to our pop culture segment here in a minute. But first, I've got to tell everyone about Built Bar. It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good, you'll want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or waxy or taste like a chemical spill, you want to eat healthy, but it just gets so boring. By week 3, you might be thinking, this is just not worth it. Where's the chocolate? Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. Most Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. Here's an idea for the new year. Go to all your secret treat stashes, at home, in the pantry, in the office, in the car, wherever. Throw out all the sugary or calorie-filled treats and replace them with Built Bars. So when you're craving a snack or treat, you can reach for something that's healthy and tastes incredible. Even if you're not a huge fan of working out, you can at least eat something that tastes good and is good for you. That way, when you enjoy a delicious Built Bar, you can almost count it as a workout. There are so many flavors to choose from. Coconut almond, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, mint brownie, and many more. Built is always coming out with new and limited time flavors, so check out Built.com often to see what's new. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, Mary, it's painful for me to go through that and talk about candy bars because we don't say candy bar in Canada.
Oh, you
don't?
We
say chocolate bar.
Oh, that's, you say chocolate bar for any type of candy,
yes,
bar? Oh, that's weird. I don't,
yes,
like that.
Because there's not, how many chocolate bars don't have chocolate in them? They're chocolate bars.
This is a question for another time because I can't think of any right now.
That's right. Stumped. Chocolate is not candy. Candy is different. Candy is like Skittles.
This is too much for my brain right now. This is too much for a Monday. This is that you need to come back to me on this topic some other time when you have prepared me for this, because you threw that out of left field and now I'm just like scrambling. But I mean, you are right in that off the top of my head, I can't think of any candy bars that have chocolate or that don't have chocolate in them, but
right,
it is strange. But you are right in that candy and chocolate are two different things, but they kind of get put into the same categories because they are,
yes,
sweet treats, essentially.
I would allow certain chocolate bars to be called candy bars, like a Score. A Score is a candy bar. Or
I don't know what that is, but I'm going to Google
it
real quick.
You don't have Score bars.
I don't know.
Oh my god.
I don't think so. Oh, that's not how you, that's not how I would spell those. Okay. This
it's,
is definitely,
yeah,
not
S-K-O-R.
Something. Yeah, this
oh
is
my
not
god,
something
I didn't
I've
know
seen.
This was Canadian.
Oh, maybe, well, I don't know. It's weird. It says it's on Hersheyland, though. I don't know if that actually is actual like Hershey, but
I mean, it doesn't matter because some of those, even the companies that are American, sometimes make stuff specifically for
Canada.
I've
never seen this before, but it looks really good because it's chocolate and toffee, and I really like chocolate and toffee.
Yeah, it's like not a hard crack toffee, but it's like, it's got a snap to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that seems nice.
Yeah, they're good. We up here, we put them in like Blizzards from Dairy Queen.
Oh, okay. I do know what those are, thankfully. They do have those here. They do have those here.
That's good. It's like, do you guys have Mars bars?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. But are they different from up here? Because I think your Milky Way with the caramel in it, that's what is a Mars bar here. So I know Mars is an American company, but.
Yes. Milky Ways are the ones that have, you know what, I searched Milky Way into Google and it gave me the galaxy. You know, this is, you throw me off with this candy stuff.
Sorry.
I believe it has caramel in a Milky Way. A Mars bar is different though. But let me check. I know, I'm doing this all on the fly and I'm like, I don't remember what candy bars look like. They're a little bit, they're different. I think they have like some sort of like, they have also caramel in them, but I think they have like another ingredient that's some sort of like fluffy marshmallow fluff kind of deal.
Yeah.
You don't have that in Canada, do you? Yeah, nougat. You don't have that in Canada, do you? Like marshmallow fluff?
It exists, but nobody uses it that I know of.
Oh, well, that's a whole thing here. It's a peanut butter, like a fluffer nutter sandwich is like a peanut butter and marshmallow fluff sandwich. Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, that's like my dad loves that.
Sounds disgusting.
You don't understand the, you know, tried and true American traditions, Andrew, and that's okay.
No, I mean, clearly don't understand the culture. So let's get to our pop culture segment real quick, because we've gone pretty long here today. Do you have anything? You don't have anything written in the doc? I watched Encanto with my kid.
Tell me about that, because the only thing I did was I watched the second episode of The Book of Boba Fett, and it was better than the first.
Much better than the first.
Yes. That's all I'll have to say, because I'm still in the middle of watching it. I'll get around to it. Like I said, if I continue to like do one episode a week, I'll be happy. But yes, talk about Encanto, because I didn't get to talk to you about it, because you hadn't watched it yet. So
yeah, I missed part of it, because we, on weekends, basically what happens is, Miles goes for a nap at 12:30 to 12:45 and then naps until like 2:15. And that's our time where we sit Dylan down and like he gets to watch TV or a movie and we trade off time to go take a shower. So like I took a shower in the middle of it, so I missed part of it. But what I did see, I really, really enjoyed. I really liked the music. I really liked the characters and I liked the story. Like Disney seems to be moving away from having like a bad guy per se in their movies, which is kind of fun. It's like the bad guy is like life.
Yeah. It's like a more emotional. How realistic. Yeah. It's more emotional.
I love that
kind
of storytelling. And it's not like about a princess and a castle. And I know that's very like dated Disney, but still it was a very interesting movie to me. I liked it a lot. We listened to the House of Madrigal, the opening song about 400 times yesterday. Cause Dylan was like, again, he's in love with Louisa because she's super strong.
Yeah.
Which is really fun. I really liked Louisa's song, actually. That was really good.
Oh, that is a great song. Yeah. It's really awesome.
And I did laugh. I looked at a couple of like Encanto memes after, and somebody was saying, like a Hispanic person was saying, that the one thing that broke them out of the movie was, in no situation ever in the history of a Hispanic family has an abuela ever said that she was wrong. I was like, it just made me laugh because I feel like that's very true of many like matriarchal or patriarchal familiar structures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm glad we both came to the same consensus. I think the movie could have been just a little bit longer to wrap up stuff at the end, but I still really enjoyed it. The music is a lot of fun.
Nobody apologized about Bruno.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, nobody heard said like, hey, sorry we blamed you for everything.
Exactly. Justice you. Justice for Bruno, basically, is the lesson better. He does. Great songs. Also very visually appealing. Like the movie just is colorful and really well animated. I mean, it's Disney. They continue to innovate on their style. I mean, it's not the most innovative. Like, I'm thinking, like, Spider-Verse, like, Into the Spider-Verse is still one of the best animated films I've seen just from what they do with it. So I think, you know, Disney has, you know, could take things from there, but Disney has perfected their style and continues to do so with each film. It's just a gorgeous film. So I definitely recommend it. Glad you liked it, though. It was just a really sweet film. Had some emotional moments, but overall just a really nice watch. But you're right in that Disney's moving away from the villains. It's like life is the villain. I'm like, yeah, we know, Disney, we know this.
Why just keep hammering that home.
Yeah, exactly.
I did find like the way that they told like the storytelling in that movie, it's great storytelling in kids' movies can take something like using superpowers as an allegory so that people can identify with like feeling like the odd one out, right? I love that. It was so well done. I saw a couple people saying, like, is this X-Men? It kind of feels like X-Men. The powers and like somebody not getting good powers or not getting any powers. Definitely a little bit of that. You could see that like Disney and Pixar has before borrowed from Marvel content, because as much as I love The Incredibles is like a flat out Fantastic Four ripoff.
Basically, but it's still really awesome. It's
Oh, it's
still really awesome.
fantastic. It's the best Fantastic Four movie that's ever been made.
Oh, I think you're right. I think you are 100% right about that, Andrew. 100%.
All right, so Book of Boba Fett, you're not going any deeper than enjoyed it more than the first one, hey?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it more than the first one. I thought that the train sequence was fun. That was
Yes, it
really,
was, yeah.
it was a really awesome set piece, basically.
I
But
really enjoyed the humanization of the Tuskens, because they're
yeah.
a group that's been kind of demonized throughout Star Wars lore or Star Wars movies and, excuse me, sorry, Disney, or not Disney, TV and movie history for Star Wars. And now to see them actually show their culture and how they embraced Boba and he became one of them, I find that super interesting and like nuanced that a lot of Star Wars fails to get across. And I saw somebody wrote an article about how like they didn't like that because it made them feel bad about Anakin slaughtering all the Tuskens in Attack of the Clones. And I was like, you were supposed to feel bad about that. He's a monster. He's the bad guy. He's Darth Vader. Did you not get that?
And
That
that's
that
not
was
even
like a
like
precursor
subtext.
to
That's not
killing
even,
the younglings.
yeah, that's not even subtext. That's text. Like you're just
Yes.
failing in, grasping meaning in your in the media you consume. And that's
Yep.
just a disappointment.
Yeah, pretty bad. But I guess that's all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL show. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to me and Mary, and thanks for making us your first listen every Tuesday and Thursday. Now make your second listen. Actually, wait, no, we have a bit of an announcement on that. I guess we should have not done it at the very end, but from now on, the Crosscheck NHL show will be coming at you Tuesdays and Fridays, because the addition of YouTube is allowing us to spread out our scheduling a little bit, and we really cover more stories. So we always feel like the Monday shows is like an avalanche of stuff that we have to cover, and then the Thursday shows we're kind of skimming for content and kind of placing that right before an interview. So we're going to have more to talk about on the Thursday shows and a little bit tighter content on the Monday or the Tuesday shows from now on. And we're excited to bring that to you. But yeah, thanks for making us your first listen every Tuesday and now Friday. Now make your second listen, Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all of your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms.